You're listening to Living Stones Community Church Podcast. For more information about Living Stones, just check out our website at lsccc.com. Have a great day. God bless.
If you have your copy of Scripture, go to 1 Samuel chapter 21 in the Old Testament beginning a new series this morning. I'm not sure if it's going to be 2 weeks or 2 months. This was actually birthed back in 2012. And I say that to say here in a little bit, just we won't be in a lot of Scripture this morning because it's more of an introduction. But this sermon kind of was birthed back in 2012. I was on vacation we'll go next month. Every year we go to Florida, or every summer we go to, not wish every month, but every summer we go to Florida and around 10 days. It's one of those vacations where the two biggest decisions you got to make in the morning are we going to the beach or the pool? And then where are we going to eat tonight? That's about as deep as it gets. But I tend to read two or three books during that period of time. I'm not a real fast reader, and a lot of times there would be something that flies by or whatever that gets my attention, or the book gets wet or whatever and falls apart. But in this summer, back in 2012, we were in Siesta Key, Florida, near Sarasota. And I have this memory of, it was a Sunday. It was on a Sunday, and I remember finishing a book. It took me a long week to finish one of the books, and it wasn't that big of a book. It just shows how slow of a reader I was. But I had already finished reading a book, and I'm sitting, have one of those low chairs that to the beach where you sit kind of in the sand like this and your feet's in the water, and it's a beautiful sunny day and the wind's blowing, and I have finished one book and I have another book that I want to read, and I'm just sitting there saying, I'm not sure if I have this in me to read another book. It looks too much like work to me. I read all the time when I'm here, and sometimes there's sometimes I read Christian books. There's sometimes when I'll read murder mysteries, I read Willie Nelson's biography last year. It's just for fun. But this one year, I'd picked up a couple of Christian books that looked interesting to me. And so I'm reading this book, trying to determine whether or not I want to continue to read. And I open up the book, and the first line of the book, of Pete Wilson's book called Plan B, says this. It says, "Do you remember the day you discovered that your life wasn't going to turn out the way you thought it was?" And as I read that, God gave me some fresh examples of that. I have good friends that pastor in Sarasota, Florida, Greg. In fact, he's my twin. We're born on the same day, same year and everything, except he's 6'10". He got all the height. But anyway, he pastors there, he and his wife, Darlene. And at the year this was going on, their granddaughter, Emma, their youngest granddaughter, was born about 3 or 4 years before that time with a major heart defect, severely autistic. She had to have a heart transplant. So they had already walked through that battle. And then when Emma, that was her name, when Emma was about 4 or 5 years of age, Heather, Greg and Darlene's daughter, discovered that she had a brain tumor. And I remember them going, the mother of the daughter that had a heart transplant has a brain tumor, and she had to go through several treatments and went to Mayo Clinic and had surgery after surgery. And, praise God, today she's cancer-free. Emma went on to pass away about 3 or 4 years after that, and I'm sitting there thinking, probably, that wasn't the way that Greg and Darlene planned their life. On that same trip, in fact, I'm leaving Sarasota, and I get a phone call from Ted Burden, one of my great friends. Many of you know him. And he said, "Dan, so what you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm driving back to Kansas City." And he said, "Hey, I just got to tell you what's happened to me." He said, "The elders at my church called me in this morning and just said that they want to go a different direction, and I'm not part of their plan for the future." And so here he is at age 57, was without a job. And again, that kind of rang true to me. Do you remember the day you discovered life wasn't going to turn out the way you thought? And then a fresh reminder was last weekend. I was in Texas preaching my my sister's funeral. And it was just another reminder that life doesn't always go the way it's planned. My sister Lynn and her husband Bob got married in 1980, and in the first 5 years of their marriage, he lost his job. She almost died of toxic shock. I mean, literally was near as death as you can be in the first 5 years of marriage. And then they had 25 years of like marital bliss, and then in her mid-50s, she's diagnosed with Alzheimer's and passed away 2 weeks ago from that at age 66. Her family never thought they would be losing her so early in their lives. And again, it rang true. Do you remember the day you discovered life wasn't going to turn out the way you thought it was going to turn out? And the truth of the matter is that sooner or later, it happens to everyone. All of us have or will have dreams and wishes or goals that never come to fruition. Plans will fizzle. Expectations are never realized. People that we trusted let us down, or we let ourselves down, and our dreams shatter or slip away. A lot of you know what I'm talking about. You know what it feels like that to have your hopes and dreams come to an abrupt, sudden stop, an abrupt end. When your plan A doesn't happen, it leaves you feeling a little bit rattled, and you're not even sure if there even is a plan B. Maybe the realization hits you in the form of an illness or death, or in the loss of a close friend or family member, or maybe your there's a financial reversal with your business or with your personal finances, or maybe for you it's a disillusioned church experience. Anybody ever have one of those? Yeah, about everybody in here. Maybe it's in the form of a divorce. You always thought you'd finish your life with the person you married, but now your marriage is ending, and you're hurt and disappointed. Sometimes our failed plans or disappointments are our fault, where we made a poor decision or we took the wrong path, but sometimes another person's poor decisions are to blame, and sometimes it's a little bit of both. And then there's those times in life when life just suddenly falls apart without any explanation at all. You ever been a part of that? And if you're like me and so many people, I know that there's times when you walk through a shattered dream that it may leave you so shaken that you're wondering if God is there at all. And if He is, does He really care or understand what I'm going through? And sometimes you can even get to the place where you wonder if you're just too messed up or broken to be healed by God. And if that's where you are today, if that's how you feel, please hear me. You need to know that you're not alone. Because what I am learning is that it's, to some extent, everyone is broken and everyone needs healing. Everyone has a shattered dream. Everyone has been let down or disappointed in one way or another. And every one of us needs healing of our brokenness. Everyone. And we all have this picture of the way our lives should be. But the reality is they rarely turn out the way that we plan and hope for. I mean, you never dream that you would end up being stuck in a dead-end job, or that your spouse wouldn't be able to have, or that you and your spouse wouldn't be able to have children. You never imagined that your marriage would end this way, or that your children would disappoint you. In your wildest dreams, those types of things wouldn't be a part of your life. You never imagined any of that, but it happened. Now you're frustrated or hurt or ticked off or all of the above. And part of what makes it so difficult for us is it seems like that everyone around us is achieving their dreams. I mean, just look on Instagram and all the social media. I mean, everybody's getting married. Everyone's having kids. Everyone's successful. Everyone is healthy. Everyone's eating this awesome food. My oldest brother is one of those guys on Facebook that takes a picture of almost every meal. And I told him last week, David, you got to give that up, buddy. Just give it up, you know. Let me take the pictures of your food. I know none of you ever do that, so. But you're seeing everybody else's highlight reels, and it looks as if everybody else is achieving what they're setting out to achieve, and you're not. And so you're sitting there thinking to yourself, I love God. I'm trying to honor Him and serve Him with my life. Why does it seem, why do those around me seem to be getting everything they want from life and they don't even give a rip about God? Why does life seem to be so hard for me? So what do you do with a shattered dream? What do you do with an unmet expectation when your life isn't turning out the way you thought it would? Or here's another one. What do you do in those areas of life where you feel like God has promised you something, but it's not coming to fruition? It's not happening on your time frame. So cool to me is that the Bible's full of stories of people just like you and me who face shattered dreams and unmet expectations whose plan A's didn't work out and they had to go to a plan B. Recently, a couple weeks ago, I read the last series that we finished on a story of Moses where we look at the heroes of faith. He's listed in the heroes of faith, and so I've gone back there and read through Hebrews 11 again. And it tells about one person after another who faced broken dreams and had unmet expectations. Things didn't go the way they planned, but you read the end of that book, and it says it even goes as drastic as they were beaten for their faith. Some of them were sawn in two, but they remained faithful. They remained faithful. And so I pray that over the next few weeks that some of their stories will come alive and become very personal for us, that this journey will provide for us some new perspective on the promises of God. And I hope that their stories will help answer some of the what now questions that we have. That these truths will unlock hope and faith in your life. That maybe there's a way of life that you've yet to discover. And the first story we're going to look at this morning is the story of David. And in fact, I know that one of our small groups is, they're like week two of David. Like John led that this morning. How'd it go, John? Is it good? Yeah, I knew you'd do good. But a great, great study on David, if you want to hop in there on Sunday mornings. But we're going to look at a little snapshot of David's life. And though it's a familiar story to many of us, I want to go back and briefly tell part of his story. First, I want to remind you there in your notes that David had a God-given dream. And his dream was to become king. You remember that the prophet Samuel showed up one day and announced that David would be the next king. And this was a little odd because not only to David, but to his family as well. And here's one of the reasons why it was odd is because there already was a king. And his name was Saul. And Saul had a son named Jonathan. And which means back then that when Saul stepped down or died, that Jonathan would take his place. But even beyond that, it was odd that Samuel would choose David because David was the youngest and the smallest kid in his family. He had seven older brothers who were stronger, better looking, and more equipped than he was to be king. David was just a kid who herded sheep. He definitely wasn't king material. But on that day of Samuel's visit, a dream was born in the heart of David. Up to that point, David's future was probably going to be in the sheep business. But now he has a dream, a new dream of leading his people. And on the day that Samuel chose and anointed David as a future king, everything changed. He felt different on the inside. He senses God's presence in his life like never before. And according to 1 Samuel, the Spirit of the Lord begins working in David's life. And hope begins to rise within his heart. But watch this. Even though Samuel had told him that, circumstantially, nothing changes. Not right away. Nothing happens for a long time, but David remains faithful. He's still tending sheep. And maybe he begins to wonder if Samuel's prediction will ever come true. I mean, after all, he is human, which means that it's very possible that he's dealing with doubts and discouragement that we feel as we in those times when we don't feel like things are moving fast enough. And so maybe he's beginning to lose hope that it's ever going to happen. And in the middle of him feeling this way, he gets a call to go to the battlefield. But not as a soldier, but as a food delivery guy. He's called to go take some food to his brothers who are fighting with the Israelites against the Philistines. And while he's there, he hears about this giant. What's the giant's name? Anybody remember? Goliath. He hears about this giant Goliath that's just ravaging the armies. There's making fun of God and the armies there. And so you all know the story. In fact, you know the song right here. Only a boy named David. Anybody know it? Only a little sling. Only a boy named David, but he could pray and sing. Come on. Only a boy named David. Only a rippling brook. Only a boy named David, but five little stones he took. And one little stone went in the sling, and the sling went around and around. And another little stone went in the sling, and the run around and around. And around and around. I used to, round and around and around. And one little stone went up in the air, and the giant came tumbling down. Yeah, you know that story. Yeah, good job. Good job. You can tell the older people here. That's good. Yeah. My arm used to almost come off my body. I had to swing, man. He kills Goliath, and instantly David becomes a national hero. Everybody knows him. T-shirts are being, his face is on the Wheaties box. Twitter's blowing up. And King Saul acknowledges what's going on. He gives him a high-ranking position in his army, even wants him to marry one of his daughters. And David has to be thinking that Samuel was spot on in his prediction that he would be king. Press pause right here. Because I don't want us to blow past this familiar story. I want us to interject ourselves into these circumstances, because chances are you've been there. You've been there where it seems like everything is falling into place. Everything is lining up. And your dream is about to become a reality. You get the job, or you meet the guy or the girl of your dreams. The pregnancy test comes back positive. Your spouse agrees to go to marriage counseling. That there's some kind of circumstantial shift that shines bright on your dreams. And your hope begins to soar. That's exactly where David is at this point in the story. Up until now, he probably hasn't staked a lot of hope on becoming the king. But now it looks like it just might happen. That God is going to make it happen. But then the story shifts, which is a common occurrence in our lives as well. Secondly, there's a threat to David's dream. All of a sudden, there's something different about King Saul. He's not quite as hip on David as he once was. In fact, now he's a little bit annoyed by all the tension that he's getting, so much so that one day out of anger, he throws a spear at David trying to kill him. And in a matter of minutes, David senses that his dreams of being king are slipping away. And out of fear for his life, he goes on the run, just like a lot of us do when our dreams don't go as planned. Like David, we panic or we turn our back on God. We try to take matters into our own hands. And 1 Samuel gives us a picture of David on the run. And as you read it, you discover that there's no mention of God's presence anywhere, no indication that David has any sense at all that God is with him. There's no confidence that his dream has any chance of happening. And in fact, he might even begin to be thinking that God is just kind of toying around with his life. Truth is here, one of the takeaways is that we often assume that the road to a God-given dream is going to be smooth and easy. As far as we know, Samuel's instructions to David was that one day he was going to be king. He didn't say anything about the delay. He didn't say anything about Saul freaking out and trying to kill him. I mean, but that kind of information would have been a little bit helpful to David. But one thing I've discovered is that God never gives you a picture of the whole plan. And he does that on purpose, because if we saw the whole plan in front of us, both the hard and the good, it would cause us not to rely on the Lord. We'd rely on our strength, on ourselves. And so God often shows us the plan for our lives one step at a time. He gives us just enough information to continue to lean on Him and trust Him. So David runs. And though that's a natural response and reasonable response, he makes a huge mistake. In fact, it's the same mistake that we often make throughout our lifetime. Like us, David thinks that he knows what God should be doing. And when God doesn't do things the way he expects them to be done, David throws in the towel and he gives up. And there's a huge lesson, a takeaway for us here is that we often get ourselves in all kinds of trouble when we assume that God thinks and feels like we do. If you read on in the story, 1 Samuel 21, you'll learn that after running from Saul, David ends up in a town called Nob. In fact, that's over here, Nob Town, right? No, Nob. N-O-B, N-O-B. He ends up in a town called Nob where he meets a priest by the name of Ahimelech who has no idea what's going on between David and Saul. And out of fear and desperation, David lies to him about being on the run, hoping that Ahimelech will help him out. He tells them that he's on a secret mission for the king. And he lies about the state of his spiritual state. And his lying is just another form of running and manipulation, trying to get out of a tough situation instead of relying on God to work things out. In 1 Samuel 21, verse 8, David tells one more lie. And it's in the midst of this lie that God provides him with a moment that he totally misses. Verse 8 says this, David asked Ahimelech, "Do you have a spear or a sword?" The king's business was so urgent that I didn't have time to grab a weapon. Lie. Verse 9, Ahimelech says, "The only sword I have is the one of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah. It's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Take that if you want it, for there is nothing else here." And David says, "There's nothing like it. Give it to me." Now, we might just read that and not think anything about that passage, but there's something significant about that because in that passage it shows that though David has given up on God, that God hasn't given up on David. And he placed a reminder of his faithfulness right in front of David's eyes to see, and he's about to miss it. I mean, the sword should have been a wake-up call for David that because this was the same sword the giant of Goliath had. That the giant Goliath had, that David had killed. It's a picture and an icon of God's faithfulness to David. I remember back when I first moved to Kansas City, and they were on Christian TV. I remember, you may remember this too, there was a black preacher that used to preach downtown Kansas City, and he used to have a dump truck on the middle front of his pulpit. Anybody see that? You remember that? Maybe I ate bad pizza that. No, he did. He had a dump truck, a plastic dump truck on the front of his pulpit. And I sit there, it kind of was curious, why would he have a dump truck on the front? And he finally said it one day. The reason I have a dump truck here is because I was riding in the back of the dump truck when I met Jesus. It made sense. It reminded him where he first met Jesus. David totally misses it. He should have seen this sword should have been a reminder of God's faithfulness. He should have seen it and immediately reminded what God had done for him, how far God had brought him. He should have thought, what am I doing? Why am I running? Why am I lying and deceiving? Why am I taking matters in my own hands instead of trusting God? But he doesn't. He does exactly what many of us do in the middle of a shattered dream. Out of fear, he keeps running from one hideout to the next with Saul right on his heels. And he forgets who God is in his life. Which leads to another takeaway for us. The takeaway is this, is that deep hurt and shattered dreams have a way of blinding us to the character and the beauty of God. And when we give up on God, we easily fall into harmful behavior that hurts not only ourselves, but also those around us. And, all we can think about is easing our discomfort or getting out of the fire. There's a guy by the name of Peter Scazzaro who wrote a book called Emotionally Healthy, Spiritually. And he says addiction. It says of addiction, that addiction is one of the ways that we choose to run. In fact, he says, in our culture, addiction has become the most common way to deal with pain. He says, increasingly, we spend time on our phones or watching TV. We keep busy running from one activity to the next. We work 70, 80-hour weeks. We overeat. We overdrink. We take pills or indulge in pornography, trying to silence the pain. He goes on to write, some people put demands on someone or something to take the loneliness away. And that someone or something can be a marriage, a friend, an ideal family. It can be our children or an achievement or a career or even a church. And he goes on to say that the result of denying and minimizing our wounds over many years is that over time what begins to happen is we become less and less human. We become empty Christian shells with painted on smiley faces, faking our way through life. I meet a lot of Christians that way. They look like the Walmart greeter. They got that plastic, how you doing today? God bless you. The world's falling apart, but they don't show that to anybody. They slap on a smiley face and they're walking around, as he says, in empty Christian shells with painted on smiley faces. So what do you do? What's your escape? What's your pattern when life doesn't go the way you thought it would? When it looks like your dreams aren't going to come true? What happens on the inside of you when you give in to fear and you start running? Do you start to lie and manipulate like David did? Or do you get angry to get what you want? You turn to anger to get what you... do you reach for a bottle or pills or load up on carbs? What do you do? Do you retaliate? Do you turn your back on God? More importantly, think about this. Where has your running got you? Did it end your pain, or did it just make things worse? Notice how this part of David's story ends. King Saul hears about Ahimelech helping David, and it ticks him off. He becomes furious. And out of revenge, Saul orders for Ahimelech to be killed along with 85 other priests and their families. And ultimately, David is responsible for their deaths. Yes, Saul was a little bit cruel and crazy, but if David hadn't lied to Ahimelech, it wouldn't have happened. David is at an all-time low. He had a position and he lost it. He had a wife and he lost her. He had a wise counselor, lost him. He had a friend, lost him. Had self-respect, and he lost it. Something we need to learn from this page in David's life is that in those times when it becomes evident that your dreams aren't coming true and you feel like that life, your life has been stripped of everything, that's not the time to run. That's not the time to take things in your own hands, and it's definitely not time to turn from God. Because this is when you need God more than ever before. And instead of running away, you need to learn to lean on Him. Your dreams may not be coming true. Things may not turn out the way you expected. But that doesn't mean that your life isn't over or spinning out of control. Watch this. It just means that you're not in control. And it's in these moments that you can run or you can learn to trust the only one who has ever had control in the first place. Do you remember the day you discovered your life wasn't going to turn out the way you thought. And if that hasn't happened to you yet, it will. There will come a time in your life when it feels like everything is slipping away. Welcome to life. When it does, you'll be tempted to run. But my prayer for you and me is that we will learn to persevere. Like that Hebrews 11 passage that talked about all the plan B, all the things that didn't happen, all the people that were disappointed, they remained faithful to their God. Because no matter how bad things seem, God is still with you. If you are a follower of Jesus and you're desiring to honor Him with a life, then He's working all things for good to those that love Him. And things will turn around one way or the other. Maybe not the way you planned. Maybe not the way you assumed God would handle it. And maybe not the way you hoped. You will see God's hand at work, if not in your circumstances, for sure in your heart. As you learn to lean on the everlasting arms, you'll discover that that God that we study about, we sing about, is faithful and true. David eventually did become king, but it didn't happen until after he started listening to God again. Even while he was still on the run, that there came a time when he stopped running from God. And he stopped trying to make things happen. And he began to trust the one who had placed these dreams in his heart from the beginning. People who are in a 12-step program often share a saying to one another. They say, don't leave 5 minutes before a miracle happens. And in the context of sobriety, this phrase is meant to encourage a struggling addict or an alcoholic to hang on, to not give in to temptation, because relief may only be minutes away. I wonder how many times in my life and in yours that we've missed out on a front row seat of seeing God's work in the middle of our shattered dream because we gave up on Him 5 minutes or 5 days, or 5 months, or 5 years too soon. It's easy to do, especially when we're in the crisis, when our trials start chipping away at us, and they leave us exhausted and confused and vulnerable. And in those times, we resign ourselves to the fact that things are simply the way they are, that there's no hope that they'll ever be different. And in that hopelessness, we either run or we take things in our own hands, or often we give up instead of waiting on God to act. If you're going through a difficult season of your life, don't buy into these lies. I know that persevering isn't easy. I know you want to run. I know you want to give up. I know you want to try to maintain or control what you can't control or maintain. Here's a word for you. Word for me: resist the urge. Lean to God and trust Him instead of panicking and running away. Despite what your current circumstances are telling you, God is for you. He is there, and He's working all things for your good. And so it all comes down to this: are you going to trust, or are you going to wear yourself and those around you out trying to be in control? Would you bow? I heard a preacher one time say that our future is just an amplification of our present. Our future is just an amplification of our present. And basically, what he was saying is that if there's not some change in your beliefs, if there's not some change in the way you're doing things, then your life will be like this forever. So, question, is that good news for you? Or does that set off an alarm in you? Truth is, many of us are at a critical crossroads in our life where you're trying to answer the what next question, or why is this happening? One thing that you probably know for sure is that something has to change. You need some answers. You need to change some patterns. Your hope needs to be renewed. That's what really needs to happen. I ask you to stand with your heads bowed. Just stand for prayer. Let me pray for you.